Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
It's been the summer of a lifetime for Salvador Perez, as he has now achieved a record for the ages. Home run number 46 becomes the most ever for a catcher in a single season, passing the great Johnny Bench, who many believe is the greatest catcher of all time. But Salvi isn't done. With less than 2 weeks to go, Salvi has four more marks in his sights. Let's see if he can bring them home. Chiefs head coach Andy Reid said something only a coach that has won a Super Bowl would say, and I love it. He didn't say he looked at the film and his defense was just a little out of sync and they got to clean it up. No, what Andy said Monday was epic and accurate. I'm thrilled to hear it, and I'll tell you what he said. Monday Night Football featured the Packers returning to form, Peyton and Eli Manning taking shots at the Patriots and fullbacks, Gronk's dog, and a player losing his dad's ashes in the end zone. I mean, Monday Night Football was dead. Dead! Now it's must-watch fun again. In D.C., even Joe Biden and his people now admit they have botched the border and it's out of control. You know, like they botched Afghanistan, they're botching the economy, they've botched COVID, and so many other things. The real problem is the way they handle this stuff and never correct course. I've now identified their six-step program for handling a crisis, and I'll share those steps with you. What they really need is a step seven where they actually fix something. And the world's leading medical journal has totally undressed Anthony Fauci and Peter Daszak and others. This group that was so wrong about the origins of COVID, it did not come from wild animals, and everyone now knows it. We'll discuss. Also, Elon Musk is taking shots at Joe Biden. It's almost getting comical out there. Brought to you by BeStock.net. Oh boy, it is fall, it is football season, it is TV season. They got some great deals right now if you want to upgrade your viewing experience for Chiefs games. They have great deals on 70 and 75-inch Samsung TVs for football as low as $499. That's amazing. If you want to upgrade and get a really great TV, how about this? The Q60A Samsung 75 is the latest and greatest from Samsung for 2021. It's ultra-intense 4K, vivid color with sharpened clarity, retails for $1,300 at Best Buy, $999 at BeStock. Again, everything's about 30% off Best Buy or Nebraska Furniture Mart. BeStock.net online or visit 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building automation systems that can save you thousands. They do great work all over the area and all over the country. At big businesses, small businesses, churches, schools, you name it, they can save you on your utilities. They put in a smart system to control your energy costs. It will save you money immediately. It's a great way to go. And if you don't have the capital to invest in the system, they'll just work as your consultant. They'll come to your location, wherever you are. They'll visit your business. They'll say, okay, show us everything you're doing. They'll take a look at it. They'll have recommendations on how you can do it more efficiently to save money. When you save money, all they ask for is a piece of what you're saving. It's Elite Automation. It's very simple. Just give them a call and learn more. There's no obligation. 913-766-2188 or log on to EliteAutomate.com. Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs, where I got my new 2021 Chevy Blazer. They just ordered it from the factory. I was literally on the phone with Mike. On my computer screen was all the options. They told me which site to go to. They walked me through every option I wanted and didn't want. Then they put the discount column up. They found every discount I was qualified for. We settled on the exact price of what it's going to be. They sent it off to the factory. And several weeks later, they called and said, hey, it's right here in Excelsior Springs at Roberts Robinson. Come and get it or we'll bring it to you. It's really that easy. You've heard about the shortage of vehicles. Have yours built. If you're not in emergency status right now and need one today, take a month or two, wait for it to get built and brought to you. It's perfect. RobertsRobinson.com and Chevrolet. Find new roads. And TJ Vilkanskis and the good people at Back 9 Development, online at Back9Development.com. Anywhere in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, Back 9 can do your room addition, your commercial property, or a custom home. You want to see the beautiful custom homes they're building? Check them out online at Back9Development.com. Back9Development.com or call TJ and just ask him. Say, hey, listen, can we meet you? Can we take a look at the Solheim condominiums at Grandmere? Or can you help us with a room addition? TJ's number is 785-236-0161 or see that portfolio online at back9development.com. Salvi did it, guys. We've been talking about it all summer here at KKHI. I couldn't be happier. He's easily my favorite player, and he's just an awesome man and human being. I'm so happy for him. That's where we start on KKHI. Hit it like Salvi.
Sports, politics, life. 360 Document Solutions presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues online at 360documentsolutions.com.
Well, we watched and we hoped and we waited all summer long for Salvador Perez to do something so historic, it may stand for our lifetime. A 51-year-old record is broken. The great Johnny Bench, perhaps the greatest catcher in the history of Major League Baseball, hit 45 home runs in 1970, setting the record for a catcher. Salvador Perez broke it with number 46 at Cleveland in the first game of a doubleheader on Monday, and a sensational story. The young man who was signed out of Venezuela for $50,000, and the Royals knew would be a good catcher, but just weren't quite sure if he'd ever be a hitter, is now the most prolific single-season home run hitter for a catcher in the history of the game. And this is very significant. If you go look at the list of players by position that hold the single-season home run record, it is a who's who, is a Hall of Fame who's who, and Salvador Perez is now among them. It was a blast to deep left center field. Salvi immediately pointed to the sky, told reporters after the game, "I don't know if you guys could read my lips or not, but I was thanking God. That's all I could think, is I was thanking God." Salvador Perez said his goal, he'd never hit 30 home runs before, was to hit 30 this year. He knew he was becoming a better power hitter. He had changed his approach at the plate. There's been so much done over the last few years about lift, backspin, the way hitters are, if you watch Salvador Perez, his elbows are in more than they ever have been. He brings his right shoulder down just a little bit. He's getting lift on the ball. He's getting backspin on the ball. These are all things that make the ball fly in the air and fly farther. He's worked very hard at changing the way he is as a hitter, because he knew he was never going to be a big average hitter, and it doesn't do Salvador Perez a whole lot of good to get singles anyway, because he can't steal bases. You don't really want to move him over. Salvador Perez is your prototypical power hitter. He's a guy that hits for a good average. He's on base a lot. He's drawn a lot of walks now later in his career. And I say later in his career, he's only 31 years old. Salvador Perez has a lot of years left to amass. Really, I think the deciding factor for him in the Hall of Fame is going to be, one, longevity, number of games played, and two, beyond that, is his final home run total. It looks like his final home run total is going to be really good. It's reasonable to believe that if he's a healthy player, he's going to hit another 100 home runs. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that's just going to pass a boatload of catchers for Salvador Perez. I mean, he's going to pass a whole bunch of guys that were considered pretty good power hitters for catchers, and he'll go flying around them. If he just hits 20 to 25 a year for five more years and retires at 36 or 37, I think Salvador Perez is a Hall of Famer. And I only make such a big deal about this all summer long for a couple of reasons. I think I mentioned to you that in March I was in Arizona visiting my son and a friend of his, and we were talking baseball one night, and they liked Salvador Perez. And I said, he's the only guy other than George Brett that I think we're going to see in our lifetime that's a Hall of Fame player, a Cooperstown Hall of Fame player for the Royals. And they both laughed at it. You know, it's hard to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's not, by comparison, it's not that hard to get in the Football Hall of Fame. A lot of players make it in the Football Hall of Fame. If you're a stud player on a team that wins some Super Bowls, you're going to get in. And it's not always about playing 13 years. It's not all about longevity. You know, it's not always about statistics. Baseball is so much harder. So the two big things now for Salvador Perez, because he's checked two giant boxes. He's a World Series MVP. He's the all-time single-season record holder for home runs by a catcher. He's got all these all-star appearances he's racked up. He's got gold gloves. He's got everything you could possibly want. The two that remain, really, are longevity and total number of home runs. And I think he's going to do very well in both those categories playing in the American League. He can clearly become a designated hitter at some point and hang on for a year or two, maybe rack up another 20 or 30 home runs. But this season is a season for the ages, and a player that loves to play and enjoys the game so much and set his goal this year, what personal goals were 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. Salvador Perez now needs two more, right, for the Royals record. He needs Well, he's tied for the lead in Major League Baseball with home runs. He's got a shot at the RBIs total in Major League Baseball. Salvador Perez this year could set the all-time record for a catcher. He could set the all-time record for a Royal. He could lead the major leagues in home runs. He could lead the major leagues in RBIs. He could win the Gold Glove and still not be the MVP because of Shohei Ohtani. The player, and you just kind of get this feeling that Salvi's that guy. He'd look like he could have been the best at home run derby, but he draws the stiffest competition in the first round. Like Salvador Perez's home run derby this summer was the second best total, right? But he lost his match, so off he went. The format screwed him over. Same thing here. He may have, arguably, I don't think he'll pass Johnny Bench's 1970. Johnny Bench had 45 home runs in 1970, but I think he had something like 145 or 148 RBIs. Salvi's not getting there. Johnny Bench, widely regarded as the greatest catcher of all time. Almost any baseball historian will say that's the greatest catcher of all time, Johnny Bench. But Salvi is putting up a season for the ages, not just for a catcher. This is the kind of season that if Shohei Ohtani isn't also a pitcher, we're not even talking about this. This is going to be Salvi because he's a freaking catcher. And he's going out there catching most nights. This is just an unbelievable thing. Johnny Bench congratulated Salvador Perez on Twitter multiple times. Then he retweeted some tweets about how great Salvi is. The only negative part of this story is at the time of the recording of this podcast, we have not completely figured out whether Salvador Perez is going to get that baseball. Early indications were the fan does not want to part with the baseball. The fan that got the ball knows it's an historic ball. And my guess is this is about money. I suspect Royals ownership will step up if the fan wants $50,000 for the ball or whatever the fan wants for the ball, they're going to do. I've always wondered why a lot of fans will immediately, an attendant will go see them and say, hey, Salvador Perez wants to meet you after the game. He liked the ball. He's going to have some things for you. And he'll sign a bat, and he'll give you a jersey, and you'll take pictures, and you'll get to go to the Royals clubhouse, and you'll have this moment. And I've always wondered why fans do that, because the moment is fleeting, and in many cases like this, it's not even your guy or your team. It's a visiting player. If there's money to be made, look, I'm all about it. It's fine. It's a beautiful tradition in baseball that the fan owns the ball when they catch it. There's no disclaimer on the back of the ticket that says the ball is the property of Major League Baseball. They really can't do that. If this winds up being very quietly, you know, $50,000 and maybe season tickets to the Indians next year, I think that can probably be arranged. The Indians will give the tickets for free. The Royals ownership could come up with the money. It's not that Salvi couldn't buy it himself, but that doesn't seem right. So I think the Royals ownership will. We just don't know at this point. Something will get worked out. That ball belongs, in all likelihood, that belongs in Cooperstown. But it would be really cool if they put that ball in the Royals Hall of Fame next year for a year and then Cooperstown. It will be Salvador Perez's family's property on loan to these Halls of Fame. That's how it works. And I just think that would be a really, really special thing. He's not done yet. There's a lot of games left, and he's got all these records in sight. I mean, this is, I hope it's just the beginning. Now, this is the big one to me. To me, this was the big one. It was all along. We talked about it all summer long. Beat Johnny Bench. Put the mark out there at 46. Get those home runs. Set the catcher record. And then we'll live the rest of our lives and see if anybody ever threatens it. Because it stood for 51 years the way it was. I mean, this is just an epic achievement by Salvador Perez, who is, you know, he's becoming really close to George Brett. George Brett won one World Series. Salvi's got a World Series. George Brett was just a great hitter. I hate to compare the two because they're different kinds of hitters, but they both have the same knack. They both, as they got older, became better, got in better shape, became more complete ball players, improved their games, became better defensively, did all these things and just kept improving. They have an unbelievable love for the game, the way they play the game. These things are so similar between Salvador Perez and George Brett. They're both natural leaders. Teammates gravitate toward them. I mean, and they're just the most epic performer at their position of their generation. There's so many comparisons, but they're just completely different ball players, different eras, different everything. But the comparisons are eerie, just completely eerie. And it's going to be a long, long, long time before we see a generational player like this that is with the Royals this long. Even if Bobby Witt, let's say, is a Hall of Fame type offensive player, and it's possible the Royals could hit on another one here. and a lot of high draft choices and a lot of players in the pipeline that they think are going to be great. The hard part is keeping them. You know, I mean, we see the Zach Greinke's of the world go off and have unbelievable careers, and maybe he's a Hall of Famer someday. That's possible. I won't rule it out. Zach Greinke's been a great pitcher for a long time, but is he a Royal? You know, that's just a different thing. You know, Harmon Killebrew played in Kansas City for the Royals, but he's not a Royals Hall of Famer. We know what we're talking about. There's no standard for this, but we know what we're talking about. Salvi is our guy. And people were screaming this offseason. I was on this podcast. I swear I think I was the only person saying, $88 million for Salvador Perez, that seems like a bargain to me. Are you kidding me? This guy is a great player. He's in the prime of his career. He's the fan favorite. He's the last thing you really have left of the 2015 World Series. And he was the MVP of that series. This Salvador Perez is it. He is the generational player. And a lot of people loved Alex Gordon and Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain. And at the time, Lorenzo Cain was my favorite player on the Royals. I just loved the way he played the game. But he's gone. And it is about staying with your team. It is about the relationship with the fans. Salvador Perez is it, man. He's just it. And I congratulate him and his family on all their accomplishments, not just in baseball, but in life. There's a devoutly Christian family that has largely moved from Venezuela. He's become an American citizen. This is just the greatest story ever. This is everything the Biden administration is not. All right, the chaos at the border, we're going to get into that later in this podcast. The chaos and just bringing people here and not trying to assimilate them and just giving them amnesty and not letting the people who really want to become citizens work their ass off toward that is a joke. It's un-American. You should want to be an American. You should be desperate to be an American. You should get here and have to work so hard to become an American. The bar should be so high that only the best are able to do it. That you really got to want it. You really got to work for it. That's what the bar should be for becoming a citizen. And Salvador Perez did all that. You know why? Because the guy works. And then he works some more, and then he works again. And now he's worked his way into the record books, and I just couldn't be happier. I'm such a massive fan of Salvador Perez and all that he stands for and his family and his accomplishments and what he's doing playing baseball. I hope the Royals can get good in the next 2 or 3 years and Salvador Perez can play on that great stage again, that he can get into a postseason and maybe another World Series. It would just be phenomenal. It's dependent upon the pitching and the pitching coming around. And if it does, maybe we'll see a 33 or 34-year-old Salvador Perez in a World Series, and wouldn't that be something? Just to see that man perform on that stage, because he is a clutch player. There is no doubt about it. Congratulations. Thought it was possible all summer. A lot of people didn't. People were running the numbers going, well, it's a long season. He's going to get tired. I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think so. He's DH'd just enough. I don't think so. He's in the best shape of his career, and he just fantastic stuff. Congratulations, Salvi. Also, congratulations to the Kansas City Monarchs, who won their title out at Legends Field on Monday night with an 8-1 win over Fargo. This is the third title in franchise history, the first as the name Monarchs. It's a 3-0 sweep in a best-of-five series over Fargo, and the Monarchs have won the championship for the third time. Paulo Orlando, the former Royals, 2-for-3 in the clinching game over Fargo, and Kansas City wins it convincingly 8-1. I'm still having a hard time with the name. I remember them as the T-Bones, but it is a fun experience. It was a great season. It was a championship season. Clearly, the Brandmeier family is putting some money into this and getting this done. The unified government is behind this team now, and a lot of people had a lot of good times at Legends Field for the Monarchs games this summer, which is affordable, family fun baseball and high-quality baseball with, you know, former World Series caliber players, Paulo Orlando, playing for the Monarchs, and they win the championship. Congratulations to them. Also, it's all congratulations here today. That's all this is. Congratulations to Andy Reid for something he said on Monday on his conference call. And normally, these things can be a little boring. They are more interesting after losses. It's always been that way. Because the questions can be difficult. Reporters have a day to think about it. You know, the conference calls are usually around noon, 1 o'clock on a Monday. So they're typically about 24 hours later. And while the questions can be okay right after the game, a lot of reporters fall into the trap right after the game saying, okay, on that 46-yard touchdown pass, what did you see? The stories are all about the game. Then the issues come out. And maybe it doesn't feel right after a game. It's hard. I've done it. It doesn't feel right to pile on a coach or a player or something right after a game and say, Jesus Murphy, your defense sucked tonight. You know, that's hard. Tyrann Mathieu made some comments after the game Sunday night that sometimes we need an ass whooping to get straightened out. Well, that sounds good, but you got your ass whooped in the Super Bowl. And that's what the whole offseason was about. And you came out and laid an egg for 53 minutes, basically, against the Browns and played 7 good minutes and got a win. The Chiefs haven't been that good this year. So far in 2 games, what's been good has been Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. That's been reliable. Tyreek Hill was really good in the first game. They took him out of the second game. The only really, really, really good thing so far for the Chiefs this year has been Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And that's gotten them to 1-1. The rest of it's kind of stunk. The offensive line stinks. The defensive line stinks. The tackling's awful. The defense is dreadful. So the following day, the questions come up of Andy Reid. And Andy Reid did something he would not have done before he won a Super Bowl. On Monday, Andy Reid said, we're going back to the drawing board on defense. Now, you never hear coaches say that. You never hear it. You only hear the great ones say that. You hear the ones, you'd hear Belichick say it, maybe, although he's very guarded in what he says. You'll hear guys that are very, Pete Carroll would say it. You know, there's a few out there. Nick Saban maybe would say that at Alabama if they had a bad week or something. Andy Reid would not have said that before they won the Super Bowl. Andy Reid, before the Chiefs won a Super Bowl, before he won one, would have been in denial and said, you know, we're going to look at the film. How many times have you heard a coach say this? We're going to look at the tape. We saw some things on tape that we can clean those up. We can figure that out. You know, there were some things that were close. We had some communication issues. These are all fixable things. We're going to get this. That's what coaches will say. We're close. It was just this little bitty thing. Almost an aberration, folks. I'm trying to tell you, it isn't as bad as it looked. You know, Aaron Rodgers has won a Super Bowl. What did he say last week after getting their butts wiped out? He said, famously last week, he said, you know, there's some games that are awful that you lose, and you go back and you look at the tape, and you go, well, it wasn't as bad as it felt while we were out there getting our butt kicked. He said, this one, well, was every bit as bad on film as it felt out there getting our butts kicked. That's what Andy Reid is saying. Okay? It felt crappy giving up 251 yards rushing. It felt awful watching our guys miss tackle after tackle. And to be honest, and I love this player, and he had, you know, the interceptions. Tyrann Mathieu had terrific plays in this game. He's about as unphysical a player as you'll find for a safety. He does not like contact. Now, I do believe it's because it's early in the year. I think later in the year, in the playoffs, whatever, I think you get more physical. I think you don't want to get a separated shoulder right now in week 2, you know, by trying to blow some guy up. So I think the Chiefs are soft at this point. I think they believe they're going to win a lot of games. I think the players, this would really make a lot of people at Arrowhead mad. This is the kind of thing I'll say that will really piss people off, especially the players, but certainly some coaches. I don't see any players on that defense that want to put their body on the line right now. They don't. They look like they're playing in September, and they just want to be around in January. And we know this fact about football. When you play that way, that's when you're most likely to get hurt. Truly is. I don't see anybody sacrificing their body. I don't see the Chiefs players getting physical. I see a lot of patty cake out there on defense. I see a lot of ole. Wait till I got some support. Maybe the two of us will take him down. I don't see it. I don't see it. I haven't seen it in 2 games. I can't insult defensive players any worse than that. There's nothing any critic of this sport can say about a defensive player than we think you're soft and you're afraid of contact right now. You're getting paid millions of dollars to go blow up guys carrying the ball. Go do it. You're getting shoved off the line of scrimmage. You're getting pushed back. There literally were like this Ben Neiman, who's probably an overachiever and maybe doesn't belong in the NFL. I don't know. Nice player, likable guy, all this, tries hard. I literally was looking at plays on Sunday night where they ignore him. They're like, okay, we don't have to worry about him. Let's throw 2 on Jones and forget about him and don't worry about him making it. If he makes the tackle, it's going to be a partial tackle 7 yards downfield. We're just not going to worry about him. It was unbelievable to watch. He looked like he was unblocked all night. Like they just said, we don't have to worry about him. It's sad, but I will give Andy Reid credit. He is not in denial about it. He said something you rarely hear coaches say, and I believe he said it because he has won a Super Bowl. He said, we are going back to the drawing board on defense. That is essentially telling the entire world, we suck at everything. Everything. The pick six was a receiver that fell down. It was Sammy Watkins, I think, wasn't it? The receiver fell down. He slipped and fell down. Matthew was in the right place at the right time, but he was only just standing there to make the tackle, waiting for the receiver to catch it and make the tackle, and the receiver slipped and fell. It wasn't some great play where he's a great player who can go up high, take the ball away, and make a play. That wasn't one. That was a gift. That was a Lamar Jackson, Sammy Watkins miscommunication or slip gift. That's all that was. And Andy Reid has spoken loud and clear. We're going back to the drawing board because we did everything wrong. I love hearing that, by the way. I love that. I think the only way the Chiefs defense is going to get better is to go back to the drawing board. Because whatever they've done this offseason, whatever they did in camp, whatever they've done in the first two games, doesn't really matter. They're 1-1. There's 15 games left in the regular season. It really matters just to get it right, to figure it out. That's why returning Super Bowl champions, it's not that easy. Tampa looks great now, but there'll be a point this year where they struggle. They'll have some injuries. It's not going to be that easy for them. There will be times. Their division looks easy. Yes, they got a lot of good things going for them, but it's not going to be easy. They will be pushed, and they'll have to get better, and teams have to do that. You don't just line up every year, bring back what you have, and say, okay, we're good to go. So I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled to hear Andy Reid say that he watched that tape overnight on the flight home, stood in front of the media and said, we're going back to the drawing board. And that is quite an admission for a coach. That's a coach saying, we have it all wrong. What we're doing right now is all wrong. Does that mean Chris Jones goes to the middle? No more time at defensive end? Maybe. Because you're not going to stop the run unless you get serious about stopping the run first. What good does it have Chris Jones on the edge rushing the quarterback if teams are just running the ball on you? Doesn't do you any good. So we'll see what adjustment they make right there. That's great to hear, though. Monday Night Football was interesting. Aaron Jones of the Packers caught a little short touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers, and he got kind of tackled in the end zone as he went in, and he was wearing a necklace with one of those little holders that had his dad's ashes in it. His father had passed away. I don't know why you would wear your necklace with your dad's ashes in it while you play football, but okay, I'm not here to judge. I don't understand why you wear any jewelry while you play sports, but they do. It's the way it is now. The necklace snaps off. They lose it. They couldn't find it. They looked on the field. They couldn't find it. They looked after the game. Couldn't find it. The grounds crew's looking everywhere. Nobody seems to know where it is. I think they'll find it. But Aaron Jones was pretty cool about it afterwards. He was asked, hey, what's the deal? You know, what, you lost this thing. What's this all about? And he said, look, even if I did lose it, there is no place my dad would rather be than in the end zone at Lambeau Field. Because that's where he believed he lost it. And it could have got stomped into the ground. They'll probably find it. But that's just a really interesting story that a player would wear that around his neck, score a touchdown, and say, hey, listen, if that's where it is and that's where it is forever, there's no place my dad would rather be. And I just thought his comments were really cool. The Packers look like the Packers. Peyton Manning, again, on Monday Night Football was terrific. He said to Eli at one point on the ESPN2 broadcast where the Mannings just hold court and watch football, he said, well, the Packers must have heard our conversation about them last week where we said they need to run the ball more to set up the pass. He said, it's almost like they bugged our rooms like the Patriots used to do. Peyton Manning will say anything. He doesn't care. Yeah, well, like the Patriots used to do. Who says the Patriots don't do it now? Peyton just said it. He said, you know, they bugged us like the Pats used to do. It was great. Pat McAfee was on, the former punter from Indianapolis, who's Peyton Manning's teammate, who's a wild card. He did seem like maybe he was a little drunk. But, you know, Pat McAfee, his podcast is excellent. He is he's an out there wild dude, man. He's a crazy guy. So maybe he was just exceptionally crazy on ESPN, but it was well worth the watch. And Gronk was on there. It had Gronk on during the game, and Gronk's dog Ralphie didn't like it when Gronk was talking to Peyton and Eli. So Ralphie was barking, and he had to put Ralphie up on his lap, which he did. And then the three of them made fun of fullbacks and said none of them like fullbacks. Because if the fullback's in the game, it's obviously not a pass play, which Peyton and Eli don't like, and it's obviously not going to the tight end, and the tight end just has to block, which Gronk doesn't like. They were literally on there making fun of fullbacks. Just great, great stuff. So if you ever want to watch, I got a bunch of emails overnight and this morning that you appreciated the tip off to watch Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli. It's not a 3-hour watchable thing. It's a flip around. Monday nights for me are flip around kind of nights. There's a lot going on. The Royals were playing. I did watch some of the regular broadcast of the thing. I was checking out some news. So I'm a flip around kind of guy, but man, it's fun to watch. When it's good, it's really good. Really, really, really good. Hopefully think the podcast is really good and you'll support our sponsors. I probably don't mention this enough, but it is a really big deal if you get the opportunity to support one of the sponsors of the podcast, to give them an opportunity in your business. I'm not just saying go spend your money with them just because we say that. I'm just saying give them an opportunity to earn your business. And one of those is Fry Orthodontics. If you'd like to perfect your smile, even if you're an adult, you're considering Invisalign, you like to fix your crooked teeth, let's just be honest, you want your smile to be better, it'd be great if you gave Fry Ortho the opportunity to do it. They're offering free retainers for life or Invisalign for the same price as braces. Nobody else does that. There's 12 locations in Kansas City, so they're close to you. If you have a teenager or a grandchild or know somebody that does, maybe mention to them, hey, Dr. Jeremy and his team are the best, because I believe they are. They were great for my daughter. She's got a beautiful smile for life. I trust them, and I believe in them. Fry Orthodontics, online at fryorthodontics.com. Your smile is just the start. Same thing at Pro Partners Healthcare. These are great conservative doctors. It's just, I don't know how else to say it. They think like you and I think. Isn't that the doctor you want? Do you want Dr. Fauci advising you? I don't think you do. I don't think you want somebody with a liberal agenda advising you on your healthcare. And these guys, their staff is unbelievable. They're just great. They'll talk to you about the vaccine. Should you take it? Should you not? They like the vaccine. They believe in the vaccine. They also believe in your right to, hey, maybe that's not for me. Or maybe you don't need it because you're younger. It's great, really, working with Dr. Troy Burns and his staff at Pro Partners Healthcare, Leawood, and the Northland. They also have nice plans for very small businesses. This is not regular health insurance. This is direct primary care. It costs less than complete full healthcare insurance. But you can provide this for your employees. If you have a small business, check into it at propartnershealthcare.com in Leawood and the Northland. And Buck Roofing and Construction, online at rbuckroofing.com. They'll do a free roof inspection right now. If you give them a call, they'll schedule the appointment to check out your roof. Many of you have done this, and you've had a shingle or two replaced right there on the spot or repaired or a piece of flashing, and they just drive away and don't charge you anything. They say, hey, give us a call in a couple of years. You know, you got 3 to 5 years left on your roof, so call us in 2 years, and we'll look at it again. That's the way they operate. It's the long game for Buck Roofing. They just want to be the company that does your roof when it's time to do it, because eventually you're going to need a new roof. 913-384-2680. You will sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. And Amazing Garage Floors, John Hutchins and his team at Amazing Garage Floors will build you and make an amazing garage floor for you that you're going to love for a lifetime. They'll also put CLXP on your driveway for pennies on the dollar of what it costs to repair or replace your driveway. We got a few weeks left that you can do CLXP. When winter hits, it's not a good time to seal your driveway. So we've got about 6 to 8 weeks left if you want to get your driveway sealed before the ice, the snow, the salt gets thrown on your driveway this winter. Get this done. CLXP from Amazing Garage Floors. AmazingGarageFloors.net. 913-901-7139. Well, even Joe Biden knows he's got a real big problem at the border now. You know, I wrote down here a laundry list for the podcast today. I'm not going to go over all the specifics of what's going on here in Texas with that bridge, you know, that they just describe as a problem with a bridge at the border. Well, it's not a problem with a bridge. And yes, it's a problem at the border, but there's no problem with the border. The problem is we're letting people in. Jen Psaki says on Monday, when asked, are these people showing their vaccination cards? Because if you get on an airplane and fly from Haiti, get this, these people are coming in from Haiti now. By the way, how are they getting here from Haiti? You need an airplane or a boat to get off Haiti and get into Central America. So I don't know how they're doing this. We, you know, Guatemalans and Mexicans and a lot of these other nationals that were coming here, it was presumed, hey, they're walking. They're just traveling by land. They're hitching rides. They've got, you know, human traffickers taking them, driving them for hundreds of miles and then doing some walking and this and that. Now Haitians and West Africans are getting here. Well, they're not walking here. They're getting here because the border's open. They know it's open and they want in. And so Haitians have become the biggest problem. And apparently we're saying we're going to send some Haitians back. But the question at the White House on Monday was, are they showing their proof of vaccination? Which is just a great question. Because I'm going to list for you in a couple of moments a bunch of things Biden really sucks at. But I want to exclude from that COVID, anything related to COVID, whether it's masks, the jab, vax cards, mandates, because the COVID thing has so many wrong things in it that Biden's doing, so many things that are provably wrong now and incorrect and just politics, so many things that are just provably about control and nothing else, it's a category into itself. So when you can take this category into itself, like Peter Ducey did at the White House, and ask Jen Psaki about the one thing that supposedly, you know, you can argue about all kinds of stuff that Democrats and liberals want to do. You can't argue about COVID. Oh, no, you can't argue about this. They have to be right on this one because they're so much smarter. So then you ask things like, okay, you've told us this is the end of the world if you're not vaccinated and you're proof of vaccination. The commercial on TV now, don't you have seen it? Getting the vaccination is freedom. Have you seen this commercial? Getting the vaccination is your freedom. That's what the commercial on TV says. I'm like, what? No, and they show people dining out and something. No. The people everywhere with the vaccine are getting COVID. The argument for the vaccine now is when you get COVID again, or if you get COVID for the first time after the vaccine, it won't be as bad. That's the argument for the vaccine now. The argument about the vaccine is not that you won't get COVID. One of the vaccines is down to like 35% of the people who get the vaccine still get COVID. That's not a vaccine. It's a therapeutic. It's a prophylactic maybe. No, it's not even that. I don't even know exactly what it is. Anyway, Jen Psaki's response about no, she doesn't say no, we don't check the proof of vaccine. She says these are people that don't intend to stay here. Like what? You don't intend for them to stay here, or they don't intend to stay here? They didn't come here to not stay. How dumb is that? I mean, the things that they say are just crazy. Thousands and thousands of Haitians are arriving, and apparently they're scared to death of everything. They are refusing the vaccine. Not only they don't have proof, they're refusing the vaccine. And Afghanis that we're resettling, 100,000 of them, are bringing in everything. You name it, they're bringing it in. Measles, malaria, tuberculosis. There's no COVID mandate for Afghans coming in. There's measles outbreaks now at military bases that are housing them. They want to bring 100,000 Afghans in here permanently. Culturally, these people will not like it here. There is a difference. People are different. A Guatemalan or a Mexican that is Christian and Catholic that comes to America will have a much easier time than assimilating. And I'm not being bigoted and biased against other religions. They will have a much easier time assimilating into this culture where there are millions of other Hispanics that go to church every Sunday and have families and have countries that border us that have a lot of similarities culturally. They will have a much easier time assimilating than 100,000 Afghans who, quite frankly, are going to come here and culturally not like it. I mean, if we have millions and millions and millions of African Americans that feel like they're left out somehow culturally in this country, which I don't understand, I think they actually drive American culture through music, through entertainment, through sports. I think most American culture, most popular American culture is driven by African Americans in this country. I believe that to be true. Through advertisements, celebrity, athletics, the king of the country, Barack Obama, all these other things. I believe they drive us culturally in many ways. I don't know how they could feel like they're outcasts, but we still hear them say that. You come here from Afghanistan, you don't speak the language, you don't understand the religion, you don't know the customs, you don't like the food. I mean, you up and down the list, these 100,000 Afghans are going to hate it here. They think they're going to like it, but they're much better off getting settled in Pakistan or something like that. If they're refugees, the better place for them is somewhere near Afghanistan. If they can't be in Afghanistan, the better place for them is somewhere culturally near there. Qatar, Pakistan, a bunch of places. Not here. They're not going to like it. Some of them will. Maybe 10% of them will. Maybe 10% of them will quickly learn English and assimilate and say, this is what I've wanted all along. But the rest of them are going to long for home. They're going to long for their culture, their food, their way of life, everything. This is not a good idea. and they're bringing all this stuff in, and we're just loading it up on our military bases. But Jen Psaki says they don't intend to stay. We're not asking for proof. The Haitians are refusing the vaccine. And I thought, okay, I could make a big deal out of this, but really the big deal is that was just yesterday's news. That's just, okay, what stupid thing is happening at the White House today? And so I wrote down a little list here. This is a small list of things that they really suck at. All right, they really sucked at Afghanistan. We lost 13 soldiers, and then we killed a whole bunch of just civilians, innocent people. We blew it. There's no, absolutely blown it. They've blown it at the border. We just discussed that. Inflation is out of control. That's on them because of their spending. They want to spend $3.5 trillion more. That will be even worse for inflation. They want to keep sending checks to people. That keeps employers from having the opportunity to hire people. They're putting wokeness into the military. These are all just disastrous things that they have done and continue to do. We could go on and on and on. The COVID thing is full of its own headlines. But I started thinking, how do I do this on today's podcast? How do I really talk about, because it's only what the issue of the day is. And so, okay, I was upset about the border yesterday, but who knows what it's going to be today or what it's going to be tomorrow, because it's just a different issue every day, and they're really bad at it. And I thought, they've got a very unique and interesting system of failing. And they are failing. There's no question this administration is failing. This is epic fail. The American public knows it. So, you know, maybe you'll disagree with this, but here's what I see them do on every one of these issues. The first sign that they have screwed up, they ignore it. The next time they're asked about it, they deny it. They say, well, that's just you over there in the conservative media asking us about this. That's not really going on. Right? Then the third time they're asked about something or pressed on something, I'm talking about any one issue. The third time they'll say, well, you know, we understand your point. Thank you for the question, but everything's okay. We're on it. We've got this. It's okay. The fourth time they're pressed on it, it becomes a sparring match with the reporter. Well, I don't like the way you're phrasing that, the way you phrased that question, Jen Psaki will say. I think that's unfair the way you framed that question. Now you know you've got your index finger and your thumb on her Achilles heel and you're squeezing it. And she's feeling it. And she's going to spar with you. The next time you bring it up, they create a distraction. They play the shell game. Oh, don't be looking over here. Look at this over here. Example. Biden's circling the drain on his Afghan policy. What does he do? He holds COVID news conferences. He just does it because it's catnip. It's just, you can't. Oh, God. No, they're all over us on Afghanistan. Let's have a COVID news conference. Let's mandate everybody with more than 100 workers has to get the jab. Let's make all kinds of stories out there and get people talking about anything else. That's what they do after they've sparred with the reporter. Then what is the final thing? The final thing is what we saw this weekend on the border story. The final thing is they admit they have a problem. We know it's a crisis. We know it's a problem. The dude comes out and says, don't come here. We're going to send you home. All they had to do was say that in February. Don't come here. We're going to send you home. Now, whether we really send them home or not, I don't know. It helps to say it. What it really helps is to do it. So we'll see what the Biden administration does. Maybe there's another category that I've missed. After ignore, deny, tell everyone it's okay, fight with a reporter, create a distraction, and then admit you have a problem. To this point, they haven't fixed any of the problems. So I don't know what the next step is. I've got a blank spot. I literally, on my notes here for the podcast today, I have a blank line with a question mark on it. I should take a picture of it and tweet it out. It's a blank line and a question mark because I don't know what their next move is. I just know with every issue, this is where they get you. They get you to where it's a disaster and we recognize it's a disaster. And maybe that's the final straw. Maybe that's the end. Maybe they say, we screwed up in Afghanistan. We're terrible at this. And then they're like, well, I already admitted they were wrong, so now we'll just ignore that story? I don't know. There is a publication, a global publication called The Lancet. It's a medical journal. Some people say it's the most respected thing in the world. This is where immediately Peter Daszak and Anthony Fauci went on February 19th of 2020 when COVID had been recognized. They authored a piece that says, "We stand together against any conspiracies that COVID-19 is from a lab, that this is an animal-borne virus." There's little question about that. We know what Fauci did. Fauci initially said it looked like it could be from a lab. Then he sent emails to the people all around the world, these other scientists. They got together in about a 24-hour period. I think this is the most interesting part of this entire story, is that they got together in about 24 hours, decided they were all going to stand together because we're researchers. There is no way in the world we're going to keep a straight face. We're going to be together on this. We're going to tell the entire world this came from an animal. This couldn't come from a lab, because the lab is our livelihood. The lab is our billions and billions of dollars that we get to live these unbelievable elitist lives that we live with our labs. And we're not letting anybody think there's anything wrong in a lab. Maybe I'd do the same thing if I believed it. I don't think they believed it. Here we are in September of 2021, and 15 scientists from around the world have penned a piece in The Lancet in response to this, basically telling Fauci, Peter Daszak, all these other people, you emphatically were wrong and lied to us. The 15 scientists say it is overwhelming now, after taking 80,000 samples from wildlife in China, there is zero evidence from any of these samples from wildlife that they could have possibly been COVID-19. Every single one of the 80,000 samples has proved negative. Negative in any kind of a match. Again, 80,000 wildlife samples. If COVID-19 was out there in an animal and it was transferring to humans, they would have found it. Look how it spread through humans. It would have spread through the animal kingdom as well. 80,000 samples, all negative. They conclude this is a result of genetic engineering and a lab accident. And they've published this in the most important publication in the world, and they basically said, this argument is over. We're only 99% sure it came from genetic engineering in a lab. We're only 99% sure. We can't 100% prove that. What we can tell you is 100% it didn't come from animals. Unless you took something from an animal, worked it over in a lab, gain of function, and turned it into something else. This is all out there. It is all out there. And thank you to all of you who've sent emails to me about ivermectin. So many of you have taken ivermectin, apparently, and it's worked for you. From your doctor, it's hard to get. Walgreens and what's the other one? CVS. They're denying prescriptions for ivermectin. It just feels like one giant conspiracy. Why would they, if your doctor sends you to Walgreens for ivermectin, why would they deny giving that to you? I just want you to ask the question, why in the world, they've got ivermectin on the shelf. It's approved by the FDA, the CDC. It's been around forever. It won a medical prize a few years ago, right? For being the greatest drug invented that year. It is a fantastic drug. It's been completely safe. Nobody questions its efficiency and what it does with viruses and its use in humans. Nobody questions it. Why would Walgreens and CVS deny people their prescription? If a doctor sends you in there with your prescription, why would they deny it? Folks, this is Big Pharma. This is the only thing I can think of. It's these jabs. It's the next round of shots. They're all making money. The people in control are in control. The pharmacies are making money. The pharmaceutical companies are making money. They got control over all the minions out here running around wanting to wear masks and get shots. And it isn't working. The shot doesn't work. I mean, let's just get real for a second. I spoke with a patron yesterday on the phone who was having trouble playing the patron podcast. And he got a hold of me and I called him. I said, okay, let me walk you through this thing. And he'd said that he and his wife were one more day in their 10-day period or whatever after COVID was up. I said, hey, welcome to the club. Now you don't have to worry about it. You've had COVID. He goes, well, we were fully vaccinated and both still got it. I've lost track of how many people were fully vaccinated and still got COVID. And they don't want you to take ivermectin, which apparently in most people clears up everything from COVID within 24 hours. We talked about the state in India with 240 million people where COVID is done. It's gone. And they say ivermectin is the reason. We pass ivermectin out like candy. If somebody gets COVID, we take it immediately. And anybody that's been in contact with them takes it before you get COVID. We don't need to test people for COVID. We don't need to vaccinate. We use ivermectin. It's cheap and it's readily available. And boy, that would be the end of their control and their power and the pharmaceutical companies, wouldn't it? And so that's where we are. That is where we are. Okay, and a final note here on the vax. Three of the top eight states of vaccinated citizens are number one, Vermont, number three, Maine, number eight, New York. These are three of the top vaccinated states in America, percentage of people that are vaccinated in those states. Number one, Vermont. Well, what state last week do you think had the highest increase in COVID cases? Vermont. They had the highest percentage increase in COVID cases. What state was next to last week? Texas. Right. These top vax states were the three worst increases in COVID last week. Maine, Vermont, New York went up the fastest last week in COVID cases, and they are number one, number three, and number eight in total vaccinations. I don't know how long they can keep this up, but I guess maybe people don't read about it or follow it that closely. I don't know, but that's a shame. That's a shame that's happening. And I'm said it from the start. I'd hate it if you got COVID and got really sick. It'd be really dreadful if you lost somebody to COVID. But you know, they're running around. They're worried about Spring Hill or Gardner, which one of the school districts, that 15 students out of 1,000 have gotten COVID this year or tested positive for COVID. I'm like, 15 out of 1,000, what percentage is that? It's like, so that's 1.5%. And there's no follow-up on any of them were sick or any of them went to the hospital. That's not it. The other school districts, they say have better. Spring Hill's too lenient. That's why their number's too high. 15 kids got the sniffles or not. Maybe they just tested positive. Who knows? It's just ridiculous at this point. It's all just so absurd. It is so absurd that Elon Musk has chimed in. We like Elon Musk here. We don't like everything about Elon Musk, but we like Elon Musk. We like Elon Musk at KKHI because he says whatever Elon Musk wants to say. And a Twitter follower of his, after his, I don't know if you saw this latest flight, they sent four civilians into space. They orbited Earth for 3 days. They splashed down the first, it's got an asterisk by it. I'm sorry. The lead civilian in the crew is a very experienced jet pilot. So technically he's not an astronaut, but if you're just going to have a civilian on board, having a jet pilot on board is probably a good idea. Anyway, this was history in the making. And so a Twitter user goes to Elon Musk and says on Twitter, why hasn't Joe Biden acknowledged this excellent, amazing feat? And Elon Musk's response was, quote, he's still sleeping, unquote. And really, that's all you got to know. And that's what America thinks. And that's even what liberals think about what's going on. Something's got to give. It can't stand. He can't stay as president. He can't make it 4 years. That's just not even possible. It's completely unthinkable. I don't know what, if it's going to be Kamala, I don't know what they'll do. It's their party. It's their regime. They can pretty much concoct their own coup. I've thought all along it will be right after the midterms. Let the slaughter of the Democrats in Congress and the Senate happen on Biden's watch and then have a news conference that he's failing in health. Kamala's going to take over for a year and a half. They can have open primaries. Any Democrat that wants to primary her butt can. And she can just sit there as a lame duck and run and see if the American people want her. It really isn't the worst plan ever for them, but it wouldnldn't lead to a loss for the Democrats if they found a good candidate. Finding a good candidate for them is really hard because all they want is somebody on the hard left. And that's a hard thing for them to do. So I don't know. It's just if Elon Musk is making jokes that the president's sleeping, you know, we know what this is. It's all just kind of one big joke. Hey, thanks as always for listening to KKHI and thanks for spreading the word. It's amazing how many of you have told other people about the podcast and told them to hit that follow or like button. Also want to remind you, if you'd like to become a patron, you can do that by going to kkhasissues.com. I had a good discussion with Chris DeGaul on his Monday radio show about Salvador Perez and some other things. We put things like that up there as well. Any other content that I do, you know, outside of this podcast, we'll link and connect and send it off to the patrons and you'll have that. So if you want to become a patron, go get signed up. kkhasissues.com. There's a lot of great sports programming there. Now in the fall, We have Lee Sterling every Thursday with his Thursday night pick, which is always kind of fun. So if you'd like to join that, you can. If not, just hit that follow or like button wherever you listen, whether you listen on your tablet, your phone, desktop, whatever it may be, driving down the road, Bluetoothing in your car. We'd love you to follow or like and get the notifications. We're trying to build that up. We're over 11,000 followers of the podcast right now, which is fantastic. So we greatly appreciate that and appreciate you sometimes, in some cases, showing someone else how to do it, how to play the podcast and how to keep it on their phone. And if you hit that follow button, it's right there for them. Anytime they want to listen, they can just play it. And they're always in the order of most recent podcast first. So pretty cool stuff. Help us out there. We greatly appreciate it. We also greatly appreciate you giving the opportunity. I always say supporting our sponsors. Just because you hear a sponsor here, I tell them all the time. I said, I hope I can get them to your doorstep. But you got to earn their business. You got to earn their business. So give them a chance to earn your business. That's what it's all about. That's our way, and we're sticking to it. At Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.